Welcome to the Ask Brian Podcast Radio Show, where you'll hear from some of the most successful founders and CEOs of businesses and startups, sharing their best advice for success and even some stories on how their mistakes actually make them even more successful. Now, here are your hosts, Brian and Tracy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're listening to the Ask Brian Radio Show on KHS 1220 and 98.1 FM. Well, we do the show every week. Over 7 years we've been doing this show. It's a business show if you haven't listened to our show before. And what we try to do is we try to bring on somebody that can either teach us something about business or is a founder or a creator of something new that you can learn about before anybody else does. So you can try to take that information and try to use it, hopefully, in your own business to help you become successful. That's our goal every week. And our show is called Ask Brian, A-S-K-B-R-I-E-N, even though most people spell Brian, B-R-Y-A-N or B-R-I-N. But we have somebody on the show that understands why Brian is spelled with an E, and she's my co-host, Tracy. Tracy, you there?
I am here, and I am ready to go with the E's exceptional E information.
All right. Our resident E expert. Ooh, I gave one away.
Oh, that's okay. I have great energy for this today. So we're just already starting out having fun. But the really, our most important E, and our most important E actually has her daughter in the studio with her today. And that is our engineer. So yay, it's bring your daughter to work day.
I know. Well, she lucked out. You know, she's got a day off of school, so she's here monitoring and attempting not to have goldfish crackers on the board here. So we're having fun.
I'm sure Sherry will love that.
Yeah.
we'll try to keep it a secret, but I think the cat's out of the bag.
But we have two E's then, because we have the engineer, no clapping, and then we have an EIT, engineer in training.
Oh, there we go.
Now I love a new E when we can bring one in. That's fantastic.
I'll clap for that.
EIT. Okay. And then the next one that comes into the category of education is our expert. And our guests are absolute experts in what they do and how they do it. And if they follow the mathematical formula that we like to present, which is the industry standard definition of expert, is that you have worked a minimum of 10,000 hours in your business category or your field, and that usually comes out to be roughly about 40 hours a week over the course of 50 to 52 weeks a year. So that would, if you're a mathematician, would say, okay, well, that's probably about 5 years. But we have never had a guest on this show up to this point that has ever just worked 40 hours a week when they were starting a business. So we think that's probably closer to a 3-year average if you're working your fanny off like most of our experts do and have done. So absolutely relying on our experts for the amazing education for the entrepreneurs. So, Peter, I was going to ask you if you're excited about any of the other E's.
No, but I have a lot of enthusiasm.
I happen to know that you're actually not in the studio today. And so I am pretty sure that wherever you are, they probably thought that was a little odd.
Oh, I'm getting the looks all over. They're going, what is wrong with that person? Maybe he has to go to the mental hospital.
Maybe.
Oh, my God. Well, I something tells me that's not the first time my experience has ever happened.
And our guest is going, what did I get myself into? I have to call Heather. But anyway.
Yes, exactly. Well, and I mean, I want to show some empathy for you, but I don't really know that you deserve it because you've been on vacation for like 3 weeks. Yeah, yeah. I know what it means, but most people do.
I know what narcissism is. Narcissism, I know.
Well, because you were exposed to that on your vacation. Or not. I don't know. I have no idea. I wasn't there. But what I do know is we have a fantastic guest today. And we should probably get there.
I think so. He's probably wondering, what did I get myself into? Anyway, Kevin, you there?
Yeah, I'm loving it, by the way.
But we do have you on tape saying that, so you can't deny it later.
And there's another E there, because Tracy will say, don't encourage, with another E, encourage him. Anyway, Kevin, you have a great background, and I would like you to tell people a little bit about your background before we get into your current venture. So can you give people a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So hello, everyone. So happy to be with you. I started at a little company called Green Mountain Coffee Roasters in the mid-2000s, and we bought Keurig at about that same time and had a wild and crazy run. And I was chief innovation and chief strategy officer until our exit about 6 years ago. And then post that, we've started this wild and crazy K-Cup brand that we're going to talk about today.
Wow, that is very, very impressive. Now, what is a key strategy officer?
So I must have misspoke. I said chief strategy officer. So corporate strategy.
Chief strategy.
Yeah, acquisitions, M&A, innovation, et cetera.
And so did you start with the company when they began, or did you start after they had already had a little momentum?
Yeah, so good question. So the super cool founder, Bob Stiller, started Green Mountain Coffee, didn't say roasters, when he was a 28-year-old young man, and he had retired to a little ski area in Sugar Bush, Vermont, and went to a coffee shop called Green Mountain Coffee, where he read the Wall Street Journal every morning before he went skiing. Prior to that, he sold Easy Wider rolling papers, which hopefully your listeners know what you do with those.
Yeah, but I don't want you know.
No tobacco allowed, dot, dot, dot.
Exactly.
He sold that in his late 20s for about $8 million,
wow.
And then launched the Green Mountain Coffee phenomenon. He's an amazing human being.
Wow, wow, wow. And so you were there, and then they bought Keurig, is that correct?
Yeah, Keurig's really, really fun. So there's 115 million U.S. households. 90 about half a million have a coffee maker of some sort. Keurig is now the primary brewing system in 41 million of those households and drove all that amazing growth. And Keurig was founded by three entrepreneurs in Boston. And actually, the reason a K-Cup looks like a K-Cup is when they had their initial meetings to found the company, that's the capsule that the Ken salad dressing came in. And they said, oh my God, this might actually work to do our single-serve coffee dream. And anyway, in the mid-2000s, the venture capital firm was at their seven-year exit, and they were just a tiny little company at the time. So we leveraged the opportunity at that point to buy them and merge the two organizations.
Wow. And that company went public or stayed private?
So Green Mountain was public since the late 80s. And then as we acquired Keurig, it was public. And then so we were public all through until the private equity sale 6 years ago. Then that organization, Keurig Green Mountain, bought the Dr. Pepper Snapple group. Keurig Dr. Pepper. So I was about $4.5 billion of revenue at the time, Peter, and they're now about $13.5 billion doing the beverage for every need and every occasion play.
Well, for full disclosure, I have a Keurig machine at home, so
otherwise we can't do the interview.
Exactly. See you later. Have a nice time. Anyway, so did you go alone and start this own brand? Did you have Cambio, or did you bring some people along that you had at Green Mountain, or how did that all come about?
Yeah, so super interesting question. I'm obsessed with triple bottom line companies, and I know we'll talk about that during the broadcast today. But our to-do list included assembling a dream team of the most senior experienced people in the K-Cup industry, and our mission is to reimagine the iconic K-Cup for the next 25 years. And that's the path that we've been on for the last 4.5 years.
So when you say that, are you referring to different varieties of the coffee, innovations?
Yeah. So Anne, my partner, and I, as we founded it, it's important to contextually, there are 60 brands, 60 brands, and 800 SKUs of
wow.
coffee that are in K-Cups. Starbucks, Peet's, Dunkin', Green Mountain, Lavazza, Kirkland, Good & Gather, et cetera. Pretty much every major league coffee brand is in K-Cups. And so our opportunity, though, is a data-driven opportunity. And here you'll be able to tell I'm a total marketing strategy nerd. But the 21% of existing K-Cup consumers, which are illuminated by recent Harvard Business Review research, which revealed that 88% of today's grocery shoppers are looking for brands that, quote, help them do good, end quote. And for us, 21% of existing K-Cup buyers are called the Hopeful Life Balancers, which we can unpack if your audience is interested. And they share that query, which is they want to buy a K-Cup brand without sacrificing taste or price, that shares their values and helps make the world a better place with each brew, basically. And that's Cambio, which is Spanish for change. So we're out to change the K-Cup industry one delicious cup at a time.
I do have a question when you're mentioning all those brands. See, I also happen to be an intellectual property attorney on the side. And so my question is a patent owned by Keurig and they allow other companies to use the K-Cup?
Yeah, great question. So the K-Cup, which is a trademark term, K-Cup owned by Keurig, that there were a series of patents from the invention up until 2013, at which point they terminated. They ran out. So now today, about 85% of all the K-Cups are made by the fantastic Keurig organization. That would include Green Mountain and Starbucks and Pete's and Lavazza and Dunkin's. About 15% are made by other brands doing some form of K-Cups because there's no longer patent protection, so anyone can be in the business, basically.
Wow. That's also something very interesting. So I thought the patent, though, could have been longer. I mean, when did they get that patent? I mean, I didn't think it was been around more than the mid-90s. When did that come
out? Yeah, they were 17 years or 19 years, whatever that is. I forget the term, but back up 19 years from 2013 is when they were issued.
Because, I mean, as an attorney, I would have said, why don't we make a slight change that can only be used in the Keurig machine, and then we have a new patent. But that's me. That's how I try to innovate.
Yeah, right. Good.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's kind of like a generic drug. Anybody can make it now. You know, if the patent runs out on a drug, anybody can pretty much use the same formula and create it. So that is.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect metaphor. Yes.
Yeah. Now, what is your unique difference of your company, Green Mountain, versus these other companies that are making the K-Cups?
Yeah, so our company is called Cambio Roasters. Cambio is precision crafted, basically, to make the Hopeful Life Balancer market segment consumer, to make her and his socks go up and down, and for them to say, wow, that's my K-Cup brand. And we have a handful of super cool differentiators, which we call her Hope. That's our avatar. So the Hopeful Life Balancer is the market segment, 21% of existing K-Cup consumers. And she basically is called Hopeful because she's leaning into people and planet values with her purchases. So think of Method detergents and Chobani yogurts and Ben & Jerry's ice creams and seventh generation paper towels, et cetera, Earth Breeze laundry sheets, et cetera. And she's called a life balancer, you guys, because she's not a raging environmentalist. She's not chaining herself to a nuclear power plant. She gets that not every purchase is perfect, but this is the insight. Big aha is whenever she can move a purchase from the yucky column, quotes, with quotes around it, to the good column with quotes around it, she gets a dopamine hit. And especially when she can do that without sacrificing taste or price, it's going to likely be one of her preferred brands. And Cambio is precision crafted, as I articulated a moment ago, to be her dream coffee brand. And we start with the best Arabica beans that can be sourced in the world by one of the most famous coffee people in the world and lovingly small batch roasted. And we put it in the most environmentally responsible K-Cup that's available in the world with the easiest and the easiest to recycle. And then to finish it off, we don't give 1% or 0%, but we give 20% of our profits to 10,000 struggling coffee farming families. And we wrap that in a super cool kind of Ben & Jerry's-esque coffee brand without charging Hope a nickel more compared to her favorite K-Cups. That's basically Cambio. Yeah. Super fun.
And how is it distributed? In other words, are you doing it in grocery stores, online? Where are you selling?
Yeah. So currently, we're one of the fastest growing K-Cup brands in the country. We have a big presence on e-commerce, would be on our site, cambioroasters.com, of course, and Amazon, who sells billions of cups. And so that's a really exciting outlet. And then we are beginning to be available in the world's finest grocery stores and mass merchants. Today, we're available in about 1,500 doors, primarily on the East Coast at this point, Peter, but growing rapidly with distribution. So in the next 36 months, we should be pretty ubiquitously available wherever your shoppers are shopping.
And can you tell us some of the brand name stores that we might have heard of? Or
yeah, so in the Southeast, we're anchored by a beautiful Kroger brand called Harris Teeter, which along with Publix sort of dominates the Southeast. In the New England area, there's a big holding company called Ahold Delhaize, and we have two, in New England and Middle Atlantic, we have two beautiful chains called Hannaford's and Giant Martin. We also have Weiss filling the key player in the Middle Atlantic, and then Lowe's stores also in the Southeast.
Well, I mean, I know I've gone to Publix. I think they're pretty big in Florida, as I recall. And how long have you been available? Like, you started, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah, we've actually been, the e-commerce business is about 4 years old, and the grocery penetration is about a year and a half old.
Wow. Well, that's pretty good and pretty impressive to get into those big chains. How many employees do you currently have?
So this is a funny answer. So the dream team of our friends and colleagues, we all, you know, have been working in the K-Cup biz for more than a decade or a decade and a half. And we all joined hands to accomplish our dream, and we're virtually distributed everywhere. But no one's technically an employee. Everyone's just an investor and team member.
Wow. That's very impressive. And with that note, I'm turning it over to my co-host, Tracy. Tracy has a couple of questions she wants to ask Kevin, and Kevin has some answers. So let's go.
Well, I would say that Cambia Roasters is like no other coffee roaster in the world, because what I want to ask him about, because it's just, I know there's a lot of buzz around sustainability and single-use plastics, first of all. So not to be a downer, but I think you might actually turn this into an upper. But, you know, can you address the environmental concerns around single-use plastics and how you as a company are addressing that?
Yeah, Tracy, thanks. So if we helicopter up to 30,000 feet, our worldview, so that sort of contextualizes our efforts, our worldview is that the market economy or capitalism is not inherently evil, though a lot of my peers would advocate for that position. We don't view it as inherently evil. We view it as a powerful system that's inherently agnostic. And it's just a system that's optimizing like any biological system. And it's interesting, as you unpack that, there are three sources of capital, three capital inputs to what we call the market economy. And those are human, environmental, and financial. Those are the three capitals that go into the system. As we're raised today, we're taught that financial capital optimization should be done at the expense of the other two. And we have a triple bottom line difference. We think that the system would like us to think that way and operate accordingly. But our point of view is that we can create organizations that can compete, brands that can compete on the national stage, which is hard to do, but that respect all three capitals, human, environmental, and financial. And in fact, think there might actually be a 1+1+1=10 relationship. They might be sort of symbiotic. And our thought is, rather than just being another smart critic of the market economy, let's get into the real world of creation and see if we can create brands and companies that become one of the many thousand points of light to show that it's possible. And you know, Tracy, what's interesting is when you do that, funny energy happens. When you're working for a purpose bigger than yourselves, there's a certain customer group that really attracts, and there's a certain employee group that really attracts. And it becomes a really, really powerful thing. So from that context, as we think about sustainability and reimagining the iconic K-Cup for the next 25 years, and I'm sorry, this is long-winded. I'll try to be really quick.
Interesting.
Oh, thanks. As you look at plastics and single-use plastics, one of the key learnings is that even though for all of us who are going to the efforts of sorting our disposables and putting them in the curbside recycle bin, whether that's aluminum cans or plastics or paper or cardboard, which is phenomenal, right? That sort of circular system. I mean, how cool is that? With plastics, there's an unfortunate reality, which makes me sad, really sad, which is that because China is no longer buying downcycled, recycled plastics, and because recycled plastic resins are actually slightly more expensive than virgin resins, only about 8% plastics that are in our curbside recycling in the U.S. end up in another product. So that means,
wow.
Unfortunately, I know it brings tears to your eyes. Unfortunately, 92% of plastics take another trailer truck ride from the recycling center and end up in the landfill where they last for, you'd have to look it up, whatever 100,000 years they last. So part of the Cambio quest, which we can talk about in the future, is to soon be the only national brand not of K-Cups that work beautifully in your Keurig brewing system and deliver all that convenience and taste without being in single-use plastics.
I love what you said, though, about how it's an energy movement of sorts, because I think a lot of people think, of course, the logistics and the tactical pieces of the single use and the environmental impact and sustainability, but I don't think that they necessarily focus on what you were saying, which is that it's a certain draw for a certain type of an employee, a certain type of consumer. It requires a certain type of leadership. So I'd love for you to just highlight, what is the difference in the leadership capacity to really attract that energy on the consumer and the team building side?
So I think as you're evaluating leadership teams, there are groups of us, and there's plenty of people who have this feeling in their heart, which is, boy, I wish I could, we all love to win. I wish I could create winning companies and brands that also aligned with the way I feel about my fellow humans and aligned with the way I feel about our precious small planet. And what's interesting, even though we're socialized, as I was growing up, just to be very blunt, thinking of the other capitals, human and environmental, was seen as, you had to be a hippie or you had to be, off the beaten path or driving an egg-shaped electric car or some doggone thing. Now today's modern consumer and today's modern employee are looking for products that they align with those values and companies that align with those values. And as I said a moment ago, so I'm being repetitive, but it's powerful, which is a big part of our human condition is we are supremely motivated to work for causes that are bigger than ourselves.
Yes. And I think I love the point that you made about what we might call, for lack of a better descriptor, the traditional business model was and not always focused on neither the environment nor the human capital piece of it. But in recruiting and human resources now, it's almost, it's not a nice to have anymore. It's a need to have, right? To be able to say that your company delivers on those initiatives.
Yes, I totally agree, vehemently agree. I wish that was true for everybody. And then the other thing that's funny about people is they're really smart and they have a great BS meter. So we like to say transparency is tasty. So if you're going to make those claims, they have to be actually transparently true because people are smart, employees and customers, and they'll see through it.
Yes, 100%. So we talked about the human resource side of the practices around sustainability and the environmental initiative. Can you talk us through some of the business strategy initiatives? Is it make it more expensive? Do you build it into your business model? I think a lot of companies think that they aspire to be environmentally friendly and sustainable and participate in recycling. But then I think there's always that fear around the cost factor and how much does that affect the bottom line of the company?
Yeah. Oh, that I love that. First, I want to say, I think legal steps sounds like totally cool. That could have streamlined a big part of our project 4 or 5 years ago. So that's awesome. So this is a really rich subject area. There are a couple things come to mind. The first is in a recent article in Forbes, they did a fantastic job articulating the purchase propensities of these new modern emerging consumers. And again, if your claims are transparently true, surprisingly large percentage of U.S. consumers are willing to pay 5, 10, 20% more for a product. We don't just say environmentally sound products, but I think it's more intellectually interesting to say they're buying products from companies that they feel align with their values, with their worldview or their aspirations for our world. And that's what they're looking for. They're looking to put their dollars to work, and by making purchases, helping them do good. So data point number one, Tracy, that's fascinating is it's easy for all of us traditional business people to underestimate the price elasticity of actually being a company people can really get behind, number one. Number two, and this is really interesting, in the U.S. today, according to all of our proprietary Cambio Roasters research, which again, we talked about me being a marketing strategy nerd, so I apologize, something really jumps out at you. For most of U.S. shoppers, when you tell them it's the environmentally responsible or sustainable alternative, we would say as researchers, it's very highly correlated with a belief, which means they also think that, dot, 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 it's either going to taste worse, not clean as well, be way more expensive. So today, most of our shoppers are trained that that's a trade-off that they're going to have to make. And the synergy of combining like a Venn diagram of those two points I just made. So if you ram those two circles together, at the intersection of that is a magic elixir. I mean, it's literally a magic elixir, which is delivering to the shopper, to the consumer, to the customer, to the person, the people of companies and products with values they can get behind without sacrificing taste or price. And that's like strapping a lunar rocket to your back and lighting the fuse. That's just an amazing and an intersection that we as business people need to all pay attention to. Now, another point I would share is that for most people in product development and innovation and branding and marketing in big, powerful brands and big and Fortune 500 companies, which is where I've spent most of my life, there's a thing called tall poppy syndrome. Have you heard that phrase? It's an Australian phrase that I'm gleefully ripping off, which is that the poppy that sticks its head up above the field gets its head chopped off. So for employees or innovators to suggest to large corporate America that we do things that are better for people and better for the planet is actually a personally risky proposition and has to be done very carefully, because the worldview of the vast majority of people running most of the organizations is that that's a risky proposition and may in fact hurt earnings in spite of the perspective I just shared about that magic elixir.
Wow. I mean, there's so much there. I mean, the whole idea of that risk situation, I think that it's got to be a big inhibitor, right?
It's huge, because remember, for most of us, we say we're working for company XYZ or whatever. Actually, we're all in the personal career optimization business, and you want to be successful. You don't want to do something stupid. So pretty soon you learn that that's going to be risky behavior, which is why frequently large organizations struggle with innovation for that, among a number of other reasons, but that's a big predictor of why. And they let the entrepreneurs duke it out and then they buy the winner. But if you look at organizations now, oh, this is funny, you guys. Like when I was growing up, you couldn't get a McDonald's hamburgers and Doritos and sodas and stuff in your mouth fast enough. Now our kids come over and they take everything out of our refrigerator that doesn't have an organic label in it. So I don't know what the heck, how we're going to sell the new generation of kids in 10 years, all those products, but that's a huge opportunity. And if you notice what the consumer packaged goods companies are buying, look at what they're acquiring. Better for you, better for the world products, almost as fast as entrepreneurs can build them. So it's awesome. So for the aspiring entrepreneurs that may be listening, this is really exciting. In the capital markets today, there's drastically more capital looking for better for you and better for the world ideas than there are investment opportunities. So there's a big void that we all can fill. And within that, just make sure as you're thinking about investors, make sure that you're creating an investable proposition that they can say yes to, which can't just be a hope and a wish and a dream. You have to go through the phases of proof of concept and making sure that that you have product market fit with the consumers and all the other growth phases that there's lots of great published literature about. But then being able to and having a business model that makes sense and knowing what an investable proposition means for an investor. That said, your idea is amazingly easily fundable today, which is so exciting.
Yes, that is just, I mean, this interview in general has just been mind-blowing for so many reasons. And I know that our audience is just like to really continue this conversation. What would be the best way for people to get in touch with you to just ask more questions, get more insight on innovation? There's so many things that you could connect with our audience on. What would be that best way?
Yeah, so first off, I want to make sure that people are able to go and check out the super cool K-Cup brand called Cambio Roasters at cambioroasters.com. And for everyone listening today, we decided to do something fun since it's the 29th of February today. We decided as you check out on Cambio Roasters, use the code LEAP YEAR, all one word, LEAP YEAR. And for today and tomorrow, it's 30% off all of our K-Cups, which is at Anne's and my cost, which is really exciting. And then don't forget to visit in January, and that shows how old I am, to make sure to visit in July on either the website or Amazon and check out what's going to be the biggest innovation in coffee since the K-Cup. It's going to be mind-blowing. And then relative to your actual question, sorry about that, you can contact me, Kevin, at CambioRoasters.com, Kevin at CambioRoasters.com, or Ann, A-N-N, at CambioRoasters.com.
Well, we might just have to have you back on in July to talk more about that amazing innovation coming our way. We would love that too. And in the meantime, don't forget that you can get this, the on-demand version of this amazing live radio show today on our podcast, and that is the Ask Brian podcast, and of course, A-S-K-B-R-I-E-N. So just look for Ask Brian podcast on any of the platforms where you listen to your favorite shows, and we will be right there. And of course, if you want to leave us one of those 5-star reviews, we'll take it. And in the meantime, Peter, you want to take us out?
Thank you very much. Thank you, Karen. We'll have to have you back on. You're listening to KHCS 1220 98.1 FM, The Ask Brian Show. Over and out.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Brian Radio Show. You can listen to us every Thursday on KTHS AM 1220 and FM 98.1 or via Facebook Live or anytime wherever you listen to your podcasts. Visit AskBrian.com to join the conversation and ask us your business questions, and we'll answer them on our next episode. That's AskBrian.com.